fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. 5-Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. 5-Alarm Task Force is brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be with you and happy to have you with us. If you are a first-time listener, we welcome you and happy to have you with us. We hope you'll enjoy the show and want to listen to many more. If you're a returning listener, we welcome you back with open arms. And we can't wait to have you stay with us for this special episode. Special, why? Because we actually did this interview on a Sunday. That's right, on Valentine's Day of 2021, with my guest, who's become a friend, though we've never met. Of course, that's happened a lot in this pandemic world, hasn't it? We've met people through Zoom and conferences and calls that we kind of connect to. And connect with, and this is my guest today, Captain Sean Mitchell, who is he's a 16-year veteran of the fire service, and he is also the secretary treasurer for the Nantucket Firefighters Local 2509 of the International Association of Firefighters, the IAFF, our dear brothers in the career service, and Sean. Along with the president of the local in Fall River, Massachusetts Fire Department, they drafted a resolution because they were tired of dealing with all the BS we're being fed regarding PFAS, PFOS, and other poisons and forever chemicals in our bunker gear. So Sean will be with us in just a few moments, and you don't want to miss this. Especially if you are an active firefighter, career, volunteer, part pay, wildland, whatever. If you're a firefighter and you wear bunker gear of any kind and any age going back to 77, you need to listen to this podcast. If you do like this show and you'd like to hear some more, please just go to our website, or you can use your own podcast platform, but it might be easier to go to our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. When you get to the homepage, all you have to do is click on the podcast tab on the top menu, and that will take you to our entire library of nearly 160 episodes over the last 4.5 years. And by the way, while you're on the website, please don't forget to sign up for our newsletter. It only comes out about 5-6 times a year, and it keeps you up to date with all the latest news on our podcasts, on our nonprofit, our blog, guests, etc. So it's a good way to do it, and we never send spam. We never sell your emails or email addresses, give them away. We protect them under the best manner we can under the law. And for those of you on Facebook who like us, I'm trying to get back there much more frequently, and we love it. I try to get there at least once a day or once every other day and add friends who have requested it there. We'd love to see you. I haven't even had time to see the numbers, but I just bang, bang, bang. Check out our friends and make sure we hook you up with us. And thanks so much. We really appreciate all of you on Facebook who follow us there. Also, We hope, again, you hope you like us. That's what brings you to us on Facebook. And for those of you who listen to us on a podcast platform like iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, dozens of them out there that we know about and some I didn't even know that we were on. But you can find us there, of course. But most importantly, we need your help if you're on a podcast platform. And we only need to ask this one time of you. We need a few decent reviews by our listeners because the platforms use algorithms that factor in those reviews to where we come out on a search. So a new person wants to look, has heard maybe about us, but they don't know where to find us. So they go to a platform and they search for Five Alarm Task Force. Well, if we don't have a number of good reviews there, then we're very low on the search results table. If we have good results and good reviews, then we're higher up on that search table. So it's very important to us. You only have to fill out reviews once. We don't ask you to fill them out after every podcast. Just once would be a big help on whatever podcast platform you use the most. That's what's important. And that will really help us a great deal. And finally, if you'd like to help us out a little bit, besides making a donation to our foundation, you can also pick up a couple of the last T-shirts from our first order. We'll be putting in a new order very soon. On the front, they have our logo, and on the back is our motto, One Family, One Mission, First Responders, Helping Each Other. And I'd like to invite you to check our blog, please, after you hear this podcast, because I had to write a very emotional entry for the blog this past Wednesday, the 17th of February. So we did make a disbursement again under very sad conditions. And so it's important that you read that and learn why we used the funds that we've raised for the purposes we specified, which is to help our brothers and sisters in dire need. So if you'll check that out, we'd really appreciate it. And that's it. So we're going to be back with my guest, Captain Sean Mitchell, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned.
New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training.
Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's part of the upcoming schedule for February and part of March. Del Cambry Fire Department, Louisiana, Introduction to Thermography Training, Underwood and Hearst. Still awaiting final confirmation. February 24th to the 27th, Hammond Fire Department, Louisiana, for a two-day classroom and live fire hybrid. Still awaiting final confirmation. March 14th to 17th, the FIERO Conference, Greenville, South Carolina. One day of Max Firebox Thermal Imaging Training. One TED Talk-style presentation, and they will have a booth at the vendor show. And March 19th to 20th, Cowpen, South Carolina, for 2 days of live fire training in combination with the training group from the Vent, Enter, and Search team. Please be sure to check their website, InsightTrainingLLC.com, or their Facebook page for registration, additional details, and date confirmation. Remember, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service TIC training.
The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders, Dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using the Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live as fire.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
And hello and welcome to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. If you're listening to the audio, welcome back. I'm your host, Steve Green. Glad to be with you and glad to have you with us once again. If you're watching the video, we're happy that you have joining us on YouTube. Don't forget to mark on the little bell so it'll remind you every time we post a new video. And my guest today is a gentleman that I've only known through tweets, texts, and emails, but he's from my home state, Massachusetts. He's from a city that's near and dear to me because it's just a half hour away from where I grew up in Framingham. He's from the city of Worcester, Mass., as our dear friends, Diana and Paul Cotter from Worcester. And Paul honorably served the wonderful city of Worcester for more than 20 years before the topic we're going to talk about in this podcast reared its ugly head. But my guest today is Captain Sean Mitchell. He is a 16-year veteran of the fire service and has served with the Nantucket Mass Fire Department. And don't make my mistake, he's not on the Vineyard. He's on Nantucket since 2006. He is currently a captain in the Fire Prevention Office, where he was responsible for public education. Again, something we have in common, education, fire investigation, and fire code enforcement, which I also did in my tenure. He is also the secretary-treasurer of the Nantucket Firefighters Union Local 2509. Sean resides on Nantucket Island with his wife, Allison, and two boys, Thomas and Patrick, with a baby girl due in July of 2021. Sean, it is an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to welcome you to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. It's nice to be here.
Well, it means a lot. It means a lot to me. We've talked quite a bit. As I said, our mutual friend, Diana, and I have tweeted and emailed each other quite a bit about this whole thing. You've been a leader most recently, really, in a major move that some producers of our bunker gear probably never, ever expected to see in their lives. But before we get to that, let's get to the how this all started. The Cancer Initiative has been around for about the last four and a half to five years, because I've been in the doing. This is my fifth season, so learned about it in 2016, the early stages, and we have some great networks out there for our brothers and sisters. And we knew until really just a couple of years ago, we thought it was just the carcinogens in the products when we respond on burns, house fires, and dumpster fires, and car fires, and tire fires, and garbage dump fires. And we knew that, you know, some of this stuff, off gas, terrible, the carpets in homes, chairs, furniture today, there's very little real wood to be found, maybe in the structure only. But we were aware of these outside sources that could get to us. If during overhaul, we would take off our bunker gear, and we'd sweat. We were still wearing our t-shirts and our suspenders with our bunkers, and we're pulling ceiling and we're knocking down. We just never realized what was happening with our pores and this stuff. And that is until Diane made this breakthrough contact. And she learned about something that is generally referred to as forever chemicals, but in our jargon, it's PFAS and PFOS. And from that, and from her, and her contact with Dr. Graham Peasley at Notre Dame, who took on an amazing responsibility based just on a passionate letter that Diane sent to him, kind of answered our prayers, because he gave us answers that we weren't sure of regarding PFAS. I know I was, I never classified myself other than an old timer. I am. I only served 8 years before I got hurt and I was out, but I've kept the fire service close to my heart. Yet what troubled me probably more than anything else was to learn that when all the samples that Dr. Peasley tested from 77 to 2019, I don't think he got 20, I don't know if he got anything from 2020, but at least through 2019, he found PFAS in all those samples. There wasn't a clean sample to be found. And that for me was a shock. As we just talked about before we started about my two scares, that I was wearing the gear that my chief and our department told us would make us safe or help us be safe in doing this job. And from the inside, it could have been starting to kill me. So what started you? What got your attention to get you on carrying the same banner that so many of us are trying to carry?
So for me, it sort of began back in 2017 when, as you talked about, Diane Cotter, we received a Facebook message to our fire department Facebook page from Diane telling us that our turnout gear contained PFOA. And I had no idea what that meant, and most of us had no idea what that meant. But she followed that up with a second message. And so we, as a fire department, looked into it, and we reached out to some people in the industry to inquire and ask what these chemicals were and if they were in fact in our gear and if they were dangerous. And we heard back from the industry representatives that we had nothing to worry about because those chemicals were not in our gear. And so, we didn't worry about it because we were told by people that we trusted that there was nothing to worry about. So we continued to wear our gear and didn't really make any changes. But I continued, myself and a few other people in the department, continued to follow Diane on social media and to read her blog and her tweets and all of that. But then it really changed for us in 2020, in January of 2020, my fire union met to discuss the upcoming contract negotiations. So our contract was due to expire in July of 2020. So we started to meet a group of five in January of 2020 to discuss, some things that we wanted to either add or change in our contract. And we've decided to focus on health and safety. And one of the members of that negotiating team is a friend of mine named Captain Nate Barber. And at the time, he's 38 years old. And he was able to meet with us in person in January. However, he was not actively working at the time because he was battling testicular cancer. And he was diagnosed around October of 2019. So he all of a sudden one day had this issue, went to the doctor, and then within just a few hours, he was on his way to Boston for treatment. And so living on an island, that's, it adds a lot. You can't just get in a car and drive over to the hospital or the doctor. You have to make some plans and get on a boat and figure out a lot of logistics and then leave your family here and not know when you're coming back. So he had been through a lot. And by January, he was back and forth between Nantucket and Boston. And so he was at that meeting and he was telling us about what he had learned about PFOA and AFFF and how exposure to PFOA had been linked to testicular cancer, among other cancers and other illnesses.
Right.
But testicular cancer stuck out to him because he was at that time fighting that cancer. So as he was telling us about that, we remembered the messages from Diane, and we decided to go back and look into it a little bit further. And so again, we reached out to the industry, and this time asked for some documentation to back up their previous claims that there was nothing to worry about. And so the industry reps sent us some letters that were actually written in 2017. And we came to find out later that they all sort of started writing these letters because of Diane Cotter and the blog that she had written. And they were all scrambling to defend their products.
Right.
So they had these letters from 2017 that they sent to us. And as we looked at those letters, it became pretty clear that the language was very vague, and it seemed a bit as though they were hiding something.
The smoke and mirrors came into view.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, because as I said, we had still been following Diane, and so we kind of sensed that there was something to this. And so we decided to look a little bit deeper and start to do our own research on the internet. And we came to find out that the gear that we were wearing did in fact contain PFOA, not only PFOA, but other PFAS chemicals that we still to this day don't even know how many or what they are.
Other
than they'll never go away, right. Yeah. So once we figured that out, Nate Barber actually made the comment and said, let's just ask the town to replace all of our gear because it's all toxic. And so he wrote a letter asking the town to do just that. And so we submitted that to our town administration and our chief, and they, along with, you know, some information that we'd found out about firefighters and cancer and information about PFOA and other PFAS chemicals in general, we presented all of this to them, and they very quickly agreed with us and agreed to replace all of our turnout gear, which was pretty huge because that really started us in motion. And we wouldn't be talking today if they had rejected that.
Did they replace just one set, or did they give you dual sets?
Well, so the plan is they're going to replace it all. They're going to replace all of our current gear, and every firefighter will have two sets of gear. At the time, we thought that would just mean we'll go out and find the gear that doesn't have PFAS chemicals and get rid of the current gear. Right. And then we'll be all set, problem solved. But that is when we really started to do some research and found out that there is no such thing as turnout gear without PFAS. And so today, we still, we're all still wearing the same gear we were a year ago or 2 years ago. We haven't made that change yet because it doesn't exist. And there's some hope on the horizon, at least for the outer shell fabric.
Right.
There's at least one company that is producing NFPA certified outer shells that are PFAS free. But the moisture barrier, no matter which moisture barrier you buy today, will contain Teflon, basically. And that's not going to change until some other things change at the NFPA, most likely. But
right.
So there is some hope, and things are starting to hopefully move in the right direction. But there's a long way to go.
I think we also need to mention that although the vast majority of listeners and viewers to our podcast are connected to the fire service or other first responder agencies, I think it's important, since you mentioned the word Teflon, that the current estimates now are that every single person living on Earth today has some sort of PFAS or PFOS chemical in their system. As I just shared with my wife and a friend of hers, as I was explaining what we were talking about, I said, our grandchild, God willing, who will be born this spring, is going to be born with some sort of PFOS in his system. And that, I guess, I forgive my own mortality, but it pisses me off to know that this wonderful occasion, I have to remember in the back of my head that my daughter has it, and I shouldn't say our daughter has it, I get whacked on the head when I walk out of the door here. Our daughter has it, and our grandson will have it. My son-in-law has it. It's just disgusting to realize that it's not just the firefighters. It's us, because we're exposed to it more frequently than the average citizen for the most part. Again, because the average citizen around the world who used a first non-stick frying pans made with Teflon. Okay. There was never any, from the beginning they came out till even today, I have never seen a report from the Consumer Safety Commission warning us about carcinogens in that, those kind of carcinogens. Yes, we look at BPA-free bottles and BPA-free pans, but has BPA been, you know, looked at to, is it one of the C8s? Is it a part of the C8? If it is, so what the hell's the difference? We were drinking with the BPA in our bottles and cooking it within our pans, as well as the Teflon. And yet, it seems that you and me, and a couple of 7 billion citizens are nothing more than just dots on a spreadsheet for net revenue for these companies, how they make money, make their profit. And people dying is just a way of life for them. But it right now, it is a scourge in the fire service. There is no doubt about it. You've seen in your department, Diane and Paul, and dozens and dozens and dozens of our other firefighters. Some we may not have even known at that point. Like I said, when Dr. Peasley found out, it dated back to samples in 77. I mean, you're talking over 40 years. How many firefighters have worked in the United States as career volunteers in the last 40 years? There's 1.2 million of us out there now, active. We're the other 38 to 40 million, you know? All of us, and again, listen, in our phone conversation, I told you how much access our department had to AFFF back in the 70s and early 80s. Because our chief was a specialist in film liquids fires. And one of those companies loved him and sent hundreds of pails of 5-gallon pails of AFFF. And we used it on real calls, and we practiced it a couple of times up at the fire pit, not spraying each other, thank goodness. But the fact is that it seems like we were just disposables. We were nothing more than a piece of Kleenex, you know, tissue to these companies, the way we've been treated. And I was so glad to, as I was started following you after, again, Diane connected us. And I first heard about the town accepting the request to replace the gear. I breathed a deep breath in first with relief. What a great community to support their firefighters. And then I exhaled and I said, oh crap, where are they going to find gear like that? Because the big names out there, all the gear is treated the same. And yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you're absolutely right. And so that's about last summer, once the funding was officially transferred from our town to the fire department to begin to purchase new gear, is when I really started to reach out to the manufacturers themselves, and in an effort to find safer gear. And that's when I started to learn basically that everything Diane had been telling us all along for years was absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And they were, as you said, they were not being honest and smoke and mirrors and not really talking about the history of, say, PFOA, which had been phased out. They would fail to mention the fact that that was in the gear up until probably 2015 or 2016. And so most firefighters are still wearing that gear, right, even today. So, and then they also failed to mention that when they phased it out, they simply replaced it with other chemicals, other PFAS that are just not as well studied as PFOA. So they hang on to the fact that there's nothing that proves that these chemicals are unsafe, but there's also nothing that proves that they are safe. And most of the science, or all of the science, the legitimate science anyway, is showing that these chemicals are a concern.
Right.
And as I said, there, it's not just us. It's, this is a huge problem outside of the fire service, of course.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing that the industry would always tell me is that, well, it's in dental floss, it's in your raincoat, it's in your boots. And I'm, you know, in sort of an effort to say, well, hey, everybody else is using it. So don't just focus on us, the manufacturers of your turnout gear. But as you know, as a firefighter, we wear that turnout gear all the time and we're exposed to it every time we go to work. And in some cases, firefighters have no choice but to keep it in their personal vehicles. Sometimes they have to keep it in their homes, depending on where they work and, yep, and how things work there. So you can't get away from it. And you know, there are some people now who say, well, you just need to wear it when you go to a fire and don't wear it otherwise and wash your hands after you touch it. But that is completely, you know, that's impossible. You can't wash your hands after every time you touch a gear before touching your body.
Exactly. And let's remember that part of the problem is internal in the gear, where we don't touch normally anyway. And it's on the inside coatings of the gear. So to say, well, don't touch it with your hands or wash your hands. I never remember reaching in and say, oh, let me feel what this shield feels like, water shield feels like.
Yeah.
Never did that. And plus the fact that in many calls, our gear heats up. Our gear cooks. We've seen it when it's been too far, but it still does cook in high heat. And we can go into a working, room and contents fire. That's 1200 degrees already at the ceiling. And thanks to our good friend, Andy Starnes, with our tick cameras, we can look down and try to find the lowest level of that. But there's no guarantee that we find it in a given room in contents fire or any kind of a structure fire. And listen, dumpster fires can be just as deadly as a room and contents fire. We're learning now. 10 years ago, nobody thought of a dumpster fire other than it's a nuisance call, right? Yeah. Or garbage can fire. Now we know much different because we don't know what's thrown in those dumpsters. Electronics, computer parts. They have also hard metals on them that melt in a big fire, in a good, strong fire like that. So almost every call we go out, that's a fire call. We really are putting our lives in double jeopardy. If it's not the call that could kill us, it's the gear we're wearing to protect us that could kill us 5 years down the road.
That's right. And I think the most concerning, there's a lot to, firefighter illness and the firefighter cancer problem. As you said, toxic smoke is a huge issue. But I think the concerning part about PFAS in our gear is that you could go into work for 24 hours and not respond to a call, but you are exposed to your turnout gear, either because you're in the same room or you're training, or simply because the recent study found that it's in the dust in fire stations and yes, from the turnout gear.
Right. I just posted that link in our blog and from Diane that a study by no less than Harvard University found at 15 departments, including one in Boston, but 15 departments in Massachusetts, massive amounts of PFOS in dust, in the day-to-day dust in the departments. And I don't care if you have a slow department and a few calls, or you're knocking 8, 9, 10, 15 calls a day, there's going to be dust. No matter what housekeeping you do, there's going to be dust. And now we're finding out from this Harvard study that we have PFOS contaminants in that dust. And if it's in our dust, it's in everybody's dust. And that's something else that people have to realize. Maybe they'll change that little, I forget the name of the company, but they have that company where dust forms together, dust bunnies, and they seem so fierce. But you know what, lady? You think you're screaming now? Wait till you see what's inside those dust bunnies.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and one of the most concerning things about that study is that about 99% of the fluorine that they found in the dust is from unknown chemicals.
Right.
So they studied, say, something like, I forget the number, but about 35 or 36. They were looking for the 35 or 36 specific PFAS, and that only accounted for 1% of the potential PFAS that they found. So there's a whole lot more And we know there's up to maybe more than 9,000 PFAS out there. So we have no idea how many are used in the manufacture of our gear. And we have no idea what they're doing to us. And everybody focuses on PFOA and PFOS because those are the most well studied.
Right.
But there's a whole lot more out there that even the researchers don't know anything about because they haven't even seen them yet.
Right. Exactly. Plus the fact that these chemicals, as we mentioned in the opening, are called forever chemicals because, according to the research, they never disintegrate. They remain as part of the environment once they're released in the environment. So they're there. And that's why the poisoning is so widespread across the world. Who would have thought that? We would have thought maybe it was just here in the United States in our gear and in our fire stations. And now we find out that the more tests are done, we see just how prevalent it is in the world. And, you have to wonder sometimes about, and I'm trying to remain very calm and not get too agitated about this topic, but it's near and dear to me. And how people could do something like this to a population.
It's truly evil. If I took some unknown chemical or even some known toxic chemical and dumped it in to somebody's water supply and made them sick or killed them, I'd go to jail for the rest of my life. Yeah. And I'd be known as a murderer, a mass murderer. But there's evidence that these chemical companies have known exactly what they're exposing us to for many decades, and they continue to do it, and they continue to hide the evidence, the science that they have that shows that these chemicals are toxic. And apparently they can just continue to do it. And then, when they finally are forced to phase out one or two of those harmful chemicals, they switch to a couple more, they change them a little bit, and then just expose us to those. And there's no regulation. The government has let us down. Our organizations in the fire service have let us down. And so that's why it's up to us, as firefighters and just as citizens, to be the ones to fight back. And that's not easy to do because we're fighting back against a huge industry and a lot of money. And unfortunately, these companies, they literally sat around a table at DuPont and decided that it was better for them to continue to use these chemicals than to stop using these chemicals.
Yeah, presumably they have to come up with something else and it will cost them money and research and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The fact is that these chemicals were born when industrial chemistry really exploded in the mid to late 40s and early 50s. And the fact that up until for a good number of years, the ability to study the molecular makeup was limited to these people who had actually created them, I guess, from what I've heard. And then finally, state-of-the-art studies and new machinery testing equipment were able to trace these down to their nucleic makeup. And we have now these chains, as we've talked about, the fluorine chains, we have the C8 chain. As a matter of fact, as I mentioned earlier with you off air, that one of the things I did this morning as I walked the dog was listen again to the end of Jim Renetka's interview with you. And, there's some talk about, now we have C6 chains, so we'll be okay. Well, if we don't really know what the C8 chains are and why they're hurting us, what does taking two chains away? Where's the proof in the pudding? Show me the money. Show me where that's going to protect us.
Yeah, I in talking with the industry, as I was trying to find this safer gear, they would promote the fact that they now use C6 and claim that C6 is safe. So I would do that. I would ask them for proof, scientific proof, and they would give me scientific proof, But guess who conducted the studies? The chemists. Yeah, they did. Right, exactly. So they, and that happened every time. And every time I would get on the phone and they would assure me that this is all safe and they could provide me with evidence that it was safe. And I would hope that they could, because then it meant maybe this was overblown and maybe it's not quite as big of a problem as we thought. But every single time, they kind of dug a deeper hole for themselves and just proved to me that they really had nothing to back up their claims that their products are safe, and that they still don't.
We're very lucky that Diane was able to get Dr. Graham Peasley to partner up, I guess, with her and us in a distant way, but he's been on the podcast twice. He's a very learned man. I respect him immeasurably. And for him to take this on his own and to do the study and to do the research and have the equipment at hand that he could see these chemicals, he could see the molecular makeup of them and learn exactly why it was so bad. And even on this podcast, his second appearance said, we do have other things we can use that are much, much safer, have much less of any sort of a danger to anybody, let alone the firefighters. But it may cost them a little bit more, you know. And let's lay it out. A new set of bunker gear, for the most part, about 3,400, 3,500 maybe, jacket and pants, right?
Right.
Not counting boots, not counting helmet, not counting hoods or gloves, just the bunker gear itself, about $3,000 to $4,000, depending on your configuration of it, length and stuff like that. Okay. Now, how many sets of gear are bought every year? And bear in mind that because a department gets, I'm not talking about Nantucket now, because that's going to be something different when it happens, but most departments, when they rotate in new gear, they rotate out their old gear, either as standby gear or it's donated to a small volunteer department that can't afford to buy gear, or it's sold overseas to fire departments, which is wonderful to do. I mean, that's who we are. We're firefighters and we care about others, not just ourselves. But when you think of how many millions sets of gear have been bought over these 40 years, and every one should have had skull and crossbones on it. Put it on the label. Don't even write anything. Just put it on the label and let us know what we're looking at. You know, it's just unbelievable that we could be treated as lab rats.
Exactly.
And lab rats may be a couple of steps above how we were treated. So they may be treated better.
Yeah. I guess a lab rat maybe in some way knows that it's in a lab, but we firefighters had no idea that we were being exposed to any of this. And, you know, when it was found out, instead of telling us the truth or being honest about the lack of science around these chemicals, or in some cases, the actual science around these chemicals, they have lied about it. And so we've been treated horribly by the same people who, you know, are all over the fire service in every magazine, at every conference, telling us how much they love the fire service and how much they're out there to protect us, behind the curtain. They're lying to us. Yeah.
Behind the curtain. It's this.
Right.
We love firefighters. We love fire departments.
Yeah.
And bringing the money.
You can't help but think that, we're viewed as replaceable because, they're always going to be able to sell their equipment, their turnout gear to us. And even, you know, if some of us are losing our lives or getting sick and have to leave the job, somebody else is going to take our place. So
that's true, unfortunately, but we need to educate them before they step into our place as well. And, what you've been doing, and Diane, and respond to safety organizations, and the people behind the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, who, and folks, well, we want to make clear, this is not sour grapes about being firefighters. If we didn't want to be firefighters, we would be something else. This is a calling that we answered. I don't know a single firefighter that I have ever met in 40 years that ever said, well, I couldn't be a lawyer, so I decided I'd have to be a firefighter. Or I didn't want to be a firefighter. I want to be something else. I want to be a contender. We all do it, whether you're a volunteer or a career, wildland, jumper. We all do it for the same reason. We want to help our community and we like the challenge. Is it exciting? Hell yes, it can be very exciting. It can also pucker your butt at the same time too. There's two different levels of exciting. Exciting is a nice roller coaster ride. Seeing a backdraft coming at you is the pucker factor and draws it back. But that doesn't mean we walk out the door and say, I'm not ever going to do this again. We take an oath to protect lives and property. But the first life we have to protect to be able to fulfill that oath is our own. And if we're being poisoned from within, unknowingly, we can't even protect ourselves. We have to be grateful for, again, people like Dr. Peasley and Mr. Rob Bellott, Attorney Rob Bellott, who dove in to this quagmire of nothing but pure crap and is trying to lead us to safer waters, I guess is the best way. And if there's somebody that can do it, it's probably Rob Bellott, because we've seen what he did in Michigan and in West Virginia. He is dedicated. He's been on the show as well. Dedicated gentleman who is looking out, not just for the interest of firefighters, but for the interest of every American, and hoping that his message gets to legal people all around this country that these chemicals were put in specifically and purposefully for the fire service bunker gear. Other poisoning of water wells around countries have been done because people weren't regulated and they just dumped stuff in there. Or even if they were regulated, they tried to hide it by dumping stuff in public waters. And it's taken a terrible toll on people in every country where this has occurred. So our concern is not focused just on firefighters who get cancer, because we know there are other causes of cancer, as we stated at the opening of this segment. There are other cancers, but those we can be prepared for. You know, most departments now are getting washing extractors, those can afford them, getting second sets of gear, they're getting clean hoods. So at least every firefighter has at least two instead of maybe even three hoods to swerve from, even extra pairs of gloves. Fire departments are working to the best they can with the finances they have available in each of their communities to protect their firefighters. And that's what we're talking about, protecting the men and women who selflessly give up time with their families, respond when the alarm bell rings, the pager goes off, the community siren hits, whatever it is, they stop what they're doing to go help somebody on the worst possible day. We're the people that don't carry guns and come and help people. We're the people who, when you say your baby's stuck upstairs in a working fire in a four-story tenement, we're the people who one way or another get into that building and try to rescue your baby to the best of our ability, even if it costs one of us our lives or two of us. If we save that baby, we'll say it was worth it. And there's not a firefighter who wouldn't agree with that. So I think this would be a good place for a break. And when we come back, we're going to, you know, we kind of give the little circular kind of without defined borders story. When we come back, we're going to talk about it's time for a little payback and punchback. So, folks, if you're watching the video, you won't see anything different in this break. If you're listening to the audio, you know that we'll be right back right after these words. And as always, please stay tuned. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lei and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it. And you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey guys, you call out. I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
And welcome back to this podcast, a five-alum task force and our YouTube video of it with my guest, Captain Sean Mitchell of the Nantucket Fire Department. And again, as I read his bio, I had to ask him to forgive me because I kept mixing up Vineyard and Nantucket. And here I am from a Boston boy who never made it to either island in all the years I was in town. I do miss it, and it is on my my bucket list to make the both islands when we get back to Boston, hopefully in a year or two. But we've been talking with Sean about this massive problem focused in the fire service, but it's actually across the world on PFOS chemicals. These are called forever chemicals because our best scientists today have no idea if they'll ever break down in the environment. They're in our drinking water, they're in our cookingware, they're in our cups, bottles, straws. They're in almost everything of in our lives. But for firefighters, not only are they surrounded in that jungle like the rest of us, but as we said in the first segment, it's been in their gear, our gear. I still define myself as a firefighter. It's in the gear that I wore back in 77 through 85. Is it going to affect me now? I don't know. I've had two scares already that I've been declared okay. But, you know, how many times is that bell going to drop and all of a sudden the doctor's not going to clear me? Because I'm just as prone. And it's funny. I've asked two different doctors about this, Sean. I asked one of them, I said, what do you think about the difference between the toxicity of the smoke today and the toxicity back when I was in? So one doctor said, It's probably more, two doctors said it's probably more toxic today because of the plastics used in almost everything. And by the way, talking about plastics, one of the ingredients of general plastic is probably going to be some sort of a C8 or C6 chain of chemical. So you use anything plastic, folks. I know we want to save the environment and use paper, which is disposable and recyclable, and we should. But remember, plastics, from your protective sheet you use for a piece of paper to the red Solo cup that you use, probably everything we touch is has some sort of contaminant in it. Yet, this gentleman and his local, I got to make sure I got the right one, 2509. I don't know, I keep saying 1509, but 2509 in Nantucket, partnered with another local, and Sean's going to tell us about that in a moment. And they decided enough is enough. A change had to be made, not just for their departments, not just for their members, but for the good of the fire service. And there was the national convention was held recently through virtual means, because it's still too dangerous for everybody to get together. And there were approximately 1,600 attendees.
Correct. Yeah, about 1,600, give or take a few.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, for a virtual convention, I think that's phenomenal. That was a great job to bring them in. And I'm going to let Sean tell you what happened when they decided in Nantucket, you know what, we're done with this. This is not just our problem. Let's find out what people are doing. If you will, please, Sean.
Sure. So the IAFF convention took place virtually just a couple weeks ago. It was initially supposed to take place last summer, but because of COVID, it was pushed back and it was decided that it would be virtual. So we sort of had a little bit of time to come up with a resolution regarding not only PFAS, but the entire problem of toxic chemicals being used in firefighters' turnout gear without our knowledge and without the science to back up the safety of them. So along with the Fall River firefighters in Massachusetts, Fall River Union. Sorry, can you hear my dogs?
I don't know if those are yours. They were mine too.
Okay. Could I take a break for just a quick sec?
Yeah, sure. 1 second.
Sorry. So we reached out to the Fall River Firefighters Union because through Diane and Paul Cotter, I had been introduced to their union president. His name is Jason Burns. And so he had been investigating and educating himself on the PFAS issue for about 3 or 4 years. And so we decided that we would work together and submit a resolution to the upcoming IAFF convention. And we decided that we wanted to do a few things. And number one, just to raise awareness so that we would be able to get this information in front of the entire union and hopefully provide some education and some awareness of the issue. And we also, something you mentioned earlier, the well-intended but sometimes unfortunate occurrence of passing turnout gear on to other communities or to other countries. And a lot of people don't realize that we're just passing on this toxic contamination along with it. So we wanted the union to provide some education on that, as well as provide education just to the fire service about PFAS, because the union has not done that over the years. And then finally, maybe the biggest one was that we wanted the union, the IAFF, to stop accepting money via advertisements or sponsorships at conferences from manufacturers who are providing us with gear, turnout gear, that has toxic chemicals in it. And so it was PFAS. It was the PFAS issue that led us to propose this resolution. But the title of the resolution ended up being Toxic Chemicals in PPE, because if hopefully, you know, we're successful in removing PFAS, but we need to know what they're going to replace it with, and we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And so it's not just about PFAS. It's about the entire system and the problem of, as we said earlier, being treated like lab rats and just, you know, nobody's regulating these manufacturers and they're allowed to use whatever they want and claim that it's proprietary so they don't have to tell us. But that, in my opinion, is unacceptable because, you know, we're exposed to this stuff every day. And there are many risks, as you said earlier, that come with being in public service or public safety. And we accept those risks and we are trained in how to minimize those risks. But if we don't know about the risk, then we can't minimize them. Right. And these chemicals we haven't known about. And in the future, we want to know about them so that, you know, if they are there, we can minimize and figure out how to reduce our exposure. So we ended up submitting a resolution. It was given the number 28. So it was resolution 28. And eventually we went through the IAFF Health and Safety Committee where it was amended a little bit, but nothing major. And then eventually, just in the last week of January, was the IAFF convention. And so we presented our resolution and there was some discussion back and forth.
I was going to ask, was there any pushback during the discussion?
So no, it was, we had about six people. So you're allowed to speak either in favor or against a resolution. And being all virtual, I think there was a record number of attendance at this convention, because typically I think it was supposed to be held in Las Vegas last July. And so that's very expensive to go and spend a week in Las Vegas. Oh, yeah. You know, so a lot of locals don't go to the convention. And if you don't go, then you can't take part. But because it was virtual and it really didn't cost, it only costed about $100, I think. There were a lot of unions there. So we did our best to promote the resolution and to let people know why we wrote it and why we think it's necessary. We tried to do that ahead of time, but we still didn't really know what would happen at the convention itself. So when they introduced our resolution, we ended up having about six or seven people from all around the country and in Canada speak strongly in favor of our resolution and urge the rest of the body to vote in favor of the resolution. And Jason and I also both spoke. We had both candidates for IAFF president, general president, speak strongly in favor of it. And so nobody spoke against it. And then after the speakers, it goes to a vote, and it ended up being 1,536 in favor and 10 voted against it. So it was 99% to 1%. So our resolution ended up passing.
That's great news. That's great news. And I think what's also important for us to note, folks, is that the IAFF is a union for career firefighters in this country. And I think Canada too, right? You have,
yes. Yeah. United States and Canada.
However, the work they've done is also is trickling down to the National Volunteer Fire Council as well. They've been very, I was lucky enough a couple of weeks ago to have Chairperson Steve Hirsch on the show. And it's a big concern for them as well now, especially because we know that so many small departments can't afford brand new gear. But whether they have 10 volunteers or they have 150 volunteers, we're all firefighters. It doesn't matter if we get a paycheck for it or we do it as a volunteer. We all do it for the same reason, to help our communities. And we all need to be as safe as we possibly can at all times in doing the job. So the work that the IAFC and people like Diane and Dr. Beasley and Rob Ballot are doing is, we don't want you to think mistakenly that this is just for career firefighters. This work that they've done and what they've started is the snowball rolling down the hill, and the target at the bottom of that hill are these manufacturers. And now it's the IAFC, and hopefully the IAFC SHS division is jumping on board with this as well, and the IAFC itself, and the National Volunteer Fire Council, the National Volunteer Chiefs Association. They're all concerned because this affects all of us. So if you're listening and you're a member of a volunteer department and you haven't heard anything about forever chemicals or cancer-causing possible cancer-causing ingredients in our turnout gear, old or new. Get to your chief or talk to one of your other officers and find out about it. Make sure your department is aware of what's going on in the cancer initiative. And believe me, there are people at all the division heads for all the organizations who are working on this and working to help firefighters in this country and in Canada with it. I have a bunch of Canadian people on board with Twitter, and I listen to watch their tweets, and they're promoting it. Good friend Brad Davidson is up there, and he jumped on it I couldn't help him enough to get this message out there. And that's what we're trying to do with this podcast. We want to make sure that while this is an amazing move that the IAFF did for their union and for the country, for the U.S. and Canada, and all of these firefighters who are career firefighters, their work is going to help everybody else as well. Because now these manufacturers know that a financial stake that they've been counting on and putting in their budgets has suddenly, pardon the pun, gone up in smoke. Right?
Right. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. This is not in any way just directed to career firefighters. It's just happened to be the route that was best for us to try to make some change. But yeah, I mean, I'm from a combination department, so we have career and volunteer firefighters, and it affects them just as much as it does me. And it affects military firefighters. It affects anybody who's wearing this gear. And in some cases, the volunteer firefighters are the ones who are putting it in their car or in their home and may not know that that's not a good thing to do, but they don't have a choice. They don't have an option because nobody's told them.
I did.
Yeah.
I did in my days. I always had gear either in the back of my car or at the top of my steps on my split ranch that we had.
Right.
I was joking with Chief Dennis Rubin last night on Twitter, because he said, it was cold in greater Philadelphia. He says it was like 12 degrees. I said, 12 degrees? You should have been up in Syracuse with me when it was minus 20, minus 30. He said, brr. And I said, yeah. I slept in long johns, and then my bunker gear was at the top of the steps, and I had a sweater and sweatpants out there. So I put that on and then put the bunker gear on and then drive down to the station. But we didn't have racks to use as volunteers. So we had to keep it with us. And so for 8 years, two different departments, I always had my gear with me. And my wife was in the car. My girls were in the car. My girls were born in that house while we were living there. I don't know what I could have passed on to them. I don't know what I could have passed on to the people who bought the house when we sold it and moved to Florida. Who knows? But this is the thing, and it's the impetus that we needed. And more than just the effort that they put in, the IAF put into this, is the fact that they used the one thing, probably the only thing, because our injuries and illnesses and deaths didn't bother them. But money concerns them. That's the only thing that gets the manufacturer's attention. They don't care about the other factors. They just want to know the bottom line. And I commend the union for not only for the work that you and Jeff
and Jason
in Fall River did. And maybe, if your schedule changes, I'd love to have you and Jason on at the same time on an upcoming podcast. I think that'd be great to bring more information to our listeners and viewers. But I commend them, because up until the end of this January, we all didn't know where this was going to be going. We had no idea what could we do to change the manufacturer's mind, because you couldn't just stop buying bunker gear. You can't do that. How do you protect your firefighters? You can't just go replace it. You can't go to the market and just replace bunker gear. So what was going to happen to it? And we had already heard the denials. Dr. Peasley talked about how he was told that no, it wasn't dangerous and stuff like that. Rob Rob Bellot, the attorney who's representing this whole situation and fighting for it, fought the same thing with the water pollution in West Virginia. And he knew what the truth would be, and he fought that. And this is what the IAF started for us. They started this big ball to roll down the hill. And we may not have hit a strike, but we sure hit a spare when you hit the manufacturers in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
Have you had any pushback from them yet, or any response from them?
No, I have not heard anything from them. But, you know, that's fine. I think I'm sure they're all discussing, you know, there was an article that came out just ahead of the vote at the convention, and their reporter reached out to some people in the industry, and they sort of expressed that they were upset about the fact that we had proposed this resolution, and that, you know, like they always do, that their main purpose and their goal is to protect firefighters and our safety, and completely ignored the fact that they've been exposing us to these chemicals, right. As they always do. So, you know, I don't really need to hear from them. We just need them to change. So the IAFF, you know, just coming from a couple of firefighters or a couple of unions, we really probably weren't going to affect the industry. But as a group, as the IAFF, we probably have a greater chance because the IAFF has a lot of influence.
Absolutely.
And so that's our goal, you know, and not only the IAFF, but we need to pressure the NFPA to change the standards, because there's no options. You know, if you want to buy gear today, you're going to buy it and it's going to have all of these PFAS that we don't know anything about, and probably some that we do know about, but there's who knows what else is in the gear, you know? We have no idea, and we don't have any options. And whether you're a fire chief who maybe has never exposed to toxic smoke because you don't go inside the building, or you're a volunteer firefighter who carries the gear in your car, you're exposed to your gear all the time. So you should have some options, at least to, you know, firefighters, we're trained to weigh the risks, you know, if you give me some options in gear and say, well, there's some trade-offs, we can remove the PFAS, but it'll be, you know, absorb more water. You know, that's okay with me. I'm willing to work with that. But let me know and give me the option.
Right. Right. And I think that's an important part. And, I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I believe I saw an article in either Friday's paper or today's that the White House is, now interested in that the EPA starts looking into PFAS, not only in the fire service, but PFAS in general, as well. So if that is true, that'll be a good step forward. We know that, President Biden has been a longtime supporter of the fire service, coming from the volunteer state, in Delaware. I have a good friend there who's a former business partner who said, and he's been in the fire service for over 30 years, and he said since Biden has been a representative and a senator, he's always been for the working man and the firefighter. He says, because who else do we turn to?
Yeah. And so I think his administration has committed to addressing the PFAS issue. So, you know, hopefully that happens. I think the EPA in the past has completely let us down and ignored it.
Without a doubt.
You know, that certainly needs to change. But there's a long way to go. But you have to start somewhere. So hopefully.
Exactly. And you know what? We have on our side some great scientific research that Dr. Peasley's done. It's all recorded. It's available for other researchers to look at. He is very open about his research for doing this and the results of it. I know he's doing, I believe, some more testing now on another level of the gear, and look forward to whatever results he's provided. And we know that we have someone legally representing the welfare of the fire service in general to hold people accountable for what they've done to us and to the American, Canadian, and almost every person on this planet. You know, whether or not there'll be legal ramifications, that's not for you or I to, you know, worry about. We can hope for it. We can hope they're made to bear the responsibility of their actions. But the most important part is that we've started another chapter in the Firefighter Cancer Initiative to protect our brothers and sisters and keep them healthy and well to do the job that they've taken on. You know what? It's answering a call, whether you're career or volunteer. You answer a call to go into public safety, whether it's fire service, law enforcement, or EMS. None of them, unless you're in a real small, tiny hamlet, very few of those jobs are easy. Sometimes you have a bump, but unless you're in a small place, most of the time there are lots of bumps to go through. If you're a firefighter, we have a lot to go through. If you're law enforcement, look what's happening to our law enforcement brothers and sisters as well. Yes, people make mistakes, but that doesn't mean we paint with a broad brush and condemn everybody. You know, they're bad cops, they're bad firefighters, they're bad accountants, they're bad garbage men, they're bad dentists. They're bad people in every walk of life. Our job is to try to just stay away from them and keep ourselves safe. And I can't commend you and Jason enough and the union. I'm just so proud. You know, for a long time, there's always been this volley career kind of growling going on. No, you don't really know. You're not really a firefighter. You're just because you got money doesn't mean you're a firefighter. But we are. We all are firefighters. We do the same job. We do it with dedication and love and a passion. Some do it for excitement, but I guess you and I can both tell them that excitement dies away pretty quickly. Now you get that, you get all eat up, as we said in North Carolina, you get all eat up with it when you first join and you first get to, you know, turn on your lights and somebody pulls over for you, go, oh man, I'm the best thing in the world now. They pulled over for me. But first time you can't make the rescue that you wanted to make, you'll never forget that. The first time the first alarm that goes off that mentions the word child, the children, you'll never forget that. There are things that we see and that we live with that nobody else should see. But we say, we'll do the job because that's who we are. And if we can do that, then your manufacturers can damn well take care of us better. And our own people need to take care of us better, the ones at the top. And we got to change the standards and we got to change protection things. And we have to find the money through grants, through programs that will allow more departments to take care of their gear, the ones that they have to keep for now. Can we cure the problem? No, but we can clean our gear, have second sets when available, use gross decon appropriately. We all know really what to do. The only thing we can't cure immediately is our bunker gear. But now at least we know that it's a danger that we didn't know until a couple of years ago. As you said, you got involved 2017, right? Something like that. So I only learned about the cancer problem in the fire service in 2016 when I started this podcast with one of my first guests. I thought, mistakenly thought, even as a firefighter, that what I was hearing happening in FDNY in New York was that it was people who worked the pile in the Port Authority. Because we found out subsequent to 9/11, of course, that the EPA gave incorrect readings on the air quality at Ground Zero. And that cost dozens and dozens of our firefighters and Port Authority people, law enforcement, their lives, because they gave their own to just bring back remnants of our brothers and sisters lost that horrible day. So this is not the end of the story, folks. We have great people like Sean and Jason and every one of the members, 1,536 who voted for it, right?
Correct. Right? Yep.
Voted for the resolution. We thank them for thinking with clear heads and not thinking with dollar signs and realizing what this means to the fire service. And people like Sean and Jason who listen, you know, being the president or an officer in a union is not an easy job, especially when you represent yourself to the community, the mayor or the city council, and you come in with your budget and what you need and your contract and stuff like that. When it comes down to it, if people can put their heads together and the civilians realize that those people in front of them are the ones that come to them on their worst day when they dial 911 to help them, if you put your heads together, you can usually come to an agreement. And what we have to do now is make sure that all firefighters, all fire departments, career, department, wildland, are aware of what's going on in the gear we wear, what the possibilities are, and knowing that that we can fight against it. We can join together as a group. It doesn't matter if you're union or volunteer, the NVFC, whoever you are, we can join together to tell these people, we don't want this crap in our gear. We want to know our gear is safe so we can go out and save the people in our community and that the firefighters near you can save the you if they need to. But we want to know that we're safe doing our job because we have enough risks, more risks than you'll have ever seen in your lives sitting in your offices there and in your big buildings, manufacturing plants, far, far away from the chemical side because you don't want to be exposed to it. You have all those special doors and those airlocks to make sure that you're safe when you're sitting in your little offices and cubicles. Well, the scientists and the other ones there, well, if they get, yeah, that's okay. They got a little vent. They'll be all right, though. Oh, if not, we'll hire two more. That's all. If they get sick, we'll hire two more. We need to end that and get our government on board with us and get our people involved, all firefighters in the United States, Canada, and around the world. Because I believe, if I'm not right, don't the U.S. manufacturers make the vast majority of gear that's used around the world?
Some of them do, yeah. Some manufacturers that are based in the U.S. do supply other countries.
Right. So yeah. We have to make sure that they know, and their firefighters know, and their leadership knows what has been accomplished to date here in the U.S. and why it's important that we don't let sleeping dogs lie. And that's why people like Sean and Jason worked at it, and Diane's been working on it since Paul was sick. And they've got many of us former firefighters involved. We mentioned Jim Bernetka with his podcast as well. And we're trying to do our best to get the word out to our listeners, to our viewers, to our brothers and sisters, that this is something that affects all of us. This is not community-based. This is every firefighter in this country, in Canada, just putting a microcosm on it. Every firefighter, career volunteer in these two countries and in every country, basically, and us as people, citizens, even civilians, are at risk because of the practices that have gone on unchecked for years and years. And Sean, I'll tell you something. I'm so glad she brought us together because this is probably, this podcast is right up there with Dr. Peasley's and Mr. Bilott's podcast. I mean, this is how important this topic is. We have to fight. And we're ready to fight fire. And now we have to fight chemicals in a way we never expected.
Yeah, very well said. And, I appreciate you having me on to, I think it's important that we keep the pressure on, you know. Our sort of victory, so to speak, at the IFF was really just sort of one of the beginning steps to creating some change. And, you know, it's not going to continue unless we continue to keep the pressure on not only the IFF, but the NFPA and the manufacturers, as well as educating the firefighters out there, which is something that you're doing. So I appreciate it.
Well, it's, you know, there's no I in this case. This really is we. We're a team. We're all a team. Every firefighter, whether you're active, retired, disabled, out like me, every firefighter is on this team, because none of us want to see the continuance of what's happening to our brothers and sisters today. We're losing too many. You know, just the other day, as I was counting up the number of COVID firefighters we've lost, a lot we've lost to COVID, which is, I believe, 127 or 8 as of yesterday. It might be a little off, but I believe it was that. I was thinking about how many we've lost to cancer in, let's say, the last 10 years. And we, as we look back on the Firefighter Initiative, we were looking back to a time when we didn't know about carcinogens and the materials that were burning today. But now we know of something even worse, more pervasive. We don't have to go into a fire to get cancer. We don't have to be around carbon soot to get cancer. We might be in an apartment that has 3 fires in an entire year, and 2 of them are car fires. And yet all 3 of those could generate from the fires themselves, if we're not wearing proper PPE, or if we get too close. I don't know if you saw the video that Chief Billy Goldfeder posted either yesterday or Friday of a car fire where the firefighter got so aggressive, he came out steaming.
Yeah,
too far in. Yeah, it's something, as Chief Billy said, you know, you don't have to do that in a car fire. With as many things as we're risking with cars today, between the airbags, the pistons that we can't see that shoot out and go right through, you know.
Yeah.
So this is a team effort for all of us. And as Sean said, you know, the NFPA, we know, is in reorganization now. It's looking to change certain standards as part of that, we hope. We also hope that they will take this into council and consider this to be for a change in the NFPA handbook, which will then forcibly show the manufacturers that if they don't meet these standards truthfully and transparently, then they're not going to have people buying their gear anymore. And that would be industry-wide. It has nothing to do with a union. This would be industry-wide. And that, I can guarantee you, they don't want to happen. So we're going to keep the pressure up. With your work, with whatever I can do, the PFOA team on Facebook, led by Diane, and there are a lot of people on social media who are doing wonderful posts about this. And helping us, and every post helps people, no matter what platform of social media you're on. If you're a firefighter, post on your social media that you're concerned about these forever chemicals in your gear, and let your department know that you're concerned. Whether you're a career volunteer, again, it doesn't make any difference. Just get informed, learn what it is. Most departments in this country now, most are providing some sort of gross decon after a working fire, which is wonderful. We've come a long way in just 2.5 to 3 years to get that done. We have to do the same thing with the PFOS, PFAS in our gear. We have to use some time to make strides, and we can only do that if we work together. If you're a podcaster, if you're a video caster, if you're on television, there are plenty of people for you to interview and talk with. Just about this, the only ones who probably will turn you down will be the manufacturers, because they have to say, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. We got your backs. BS. We have to have our own backs. So, Sean, thank you so much for your time and your work and your effort and your dedication to the problem, to your union, to the IAF in general, to the wonderful people of Nantucket. I wanted to make sure I got that right this time. Nantucket, the island. But I, like I said on the phone that night, I just can't wait for travel to resume and we can get up to Boston and I'll be on a ferry out or plane out to see you.
Absolutely.
Raise a beer together to our brothers and sisters.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate your time and thank you.
This is an honor and a privilege for me. I really appreciate you sharing on Mother's Day and during the Daytona Beach 500. I didn't get to see the beginning of, but that's okay. I'll rewind it and I'll take a look at it. But thank you so much for everything you're doing, everything you've done and you continue to do. As a guest, you have the same open invitation as every other guest. Whenever you want to come back on and you have something, anything you want to talk about, let me know. Like I said, if Jason would like to join you, I'd love to have you both on. Maybe we can get Diane. Maybe we can get Dr. Peasley and Mr. Ballard on. Maybe that would be a great podcast if we get a real team effort and we'll maybe try for an evening. I'll give in for an evening show like I did for the webinar a couple of weeks ago. We had to start at 6:30. I had to prepare myself the entire day to last till then. It would be worth an evening interview if we could all get together. So I'm gonna if you'll contact Jason, I'll send an email to Diane. Probably she'll watch the video first before I have a chance to even type it out to her. She's a doll. I just can't say enough about her and Paul and their bravery, you know. And let's be honest, folks. Every single firefighter is brave. Every single firefighter is brave, or they wouldn't be in the job. Every single firefighter is dedicated. And every single firefighter who has been stricken with cancer, whether it's been because of the smoke and the carcinogens, or it's because of the crap in our bunker gear, is brave, or has been brave, and will be brave. Okay? We need you to be brave with us. You don't have to be a firefighter. You don't have to be a law enforcement officer. You don't have to be a EMS paramedic or EMT. You can be Joe Citizen or Susie Citizen, and you can be here to back us up on what we're trying to do. We deserve better. The people who protect your lives, your families, your property deserve better than to know this poison in the gear that they wear to protect you that's killing us. So with your help and your voice joining ours, we can make changes. We have to work towards that end. We have to make change to reduce that kind of danger from the job that all the firefighters around the world, but especially right now that we're talking about in the US and Canada, are dealing with. Our jobs are difficult enough a lot of times. As I said earlier, we see things that we would never want you to ever have to see. But it's our job to do it. And we're there for you. And we ask that you be there for us as well. Thank you for tuning in. Again, my thanks to Sean Mitchell, Captain Sean Mitchell from the Nantucket Fire Department. We appreciate everything you're doing, everything you've done, and everything you continue to do. We wish you good luck this summer with the new arrival. I'll let you know when ours arrives as well.
Great. Thank you.
And like I said, I look forward to another podcast with having the entire team on board with us. I think it'll help keep that message alive and around. And again, my thanks to those 1,536 members who voted. I commend them. I don't see any rift between us anymore. We are one fire service in America.
Right.
That's who we are.
Right.
Thanks again, John. Folks, if you're watching the video, you'll see the credits at the end. If you're listening to the audio podcast, we'll be right back right after these words. As always, please stay tuned. Thank you for watching. Stay safe and stay well.
You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force. We'll be right back.
When most of us see an engine, a ladder company, or ambulance, we think about some of the runs we've been on, or we look forward to the next one coming. But what if that rig shows up at your home for an emergency? Repairs, deductibles, copays, and other out-of-pocket expenses quickly add up. You know our podcast, Five Alarm Task Force. We have been bringing you some of the best instructors, mentors, and other experts in the fire service and emergency medicine for over four seasons. And now, our new nonprofit, Five Alarm Task Force Corp, wants to be able to help you if you find yourself or your family in dire need. Since we launched the nonprofit, our website visits have truly increased, yet only one donation has come in. Look, 2020 has been a crappy year for most of us, and money is tight. It's no different in my own home, where only my wife is able to work. That's right, I became medically disabled in 1992. Sure, a new implant reduced my pain during the day and lets me do some more, but I can't work. With that said, we are not asking you for $100 or even $50. Could you contribute $1, $5, or even $10? If so, those add up. So please head over to our website, 5-AlarmTaskForceCorp.org. On the top menu, please select the Our Mission tab to learn more about our efforts to help firefighters and other first responders in dire need. On many of the pages, you'll see our donate button from our good friends at PayPal. And you don't have to have a PayPal account. You can use any debit or credit card that you normally do, and your donation may be tax deductible for you. With the holidays almost around the corner, you will know that your donation will go to help our colleagues. We do it every day for strangers, don't we? And we have to help our own when he or she is in dire need. Thanks very much, and please, pass it on. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and stay well. Please contact your tax advisor for the determination if your donation will be tax deductible for you.
Time to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the TV's off, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But wait, it's not all right. When it's time for bed, keep your family safe in the event of a fire. Close before you doze. In other words, close your bedroom doors when it's time to sleep. You've installed working smoke and carbon monoxide alarms and practiced fire escape plans. Now add this important step to protecting yourself and your loved ones. Close before you doze. Closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, providing trapped occupants more time to escape when seconds count. Closed doors can slow the spread of smoke and fire, conserve oxygen levels, and keep temperatures significantly lower. Also remember, if you're the last one to exit, make sure you close the main door. For more information about close before you doze, visit ulfirefightersafety.org. A life safety message from UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute, your local fire department, and Five Alarm Task Force.
Hi, folks. This is Steve. Over the past week leading up to the release of this podcast, the audio side of the podcast, I've made several posts to our blog with articles from various magazines and papers that are dealing with the very topic of today's podcast. Not just the IAF positions with the gear manufacturers, but the very fact of what science is reporting is being found in our bunker gear, in our fire stations, from our gear, from maybe not doing gross decon enough, and just from the natural environment that now contains these PFAS, PFOS chemicals in dust that gathers in our fire stations and our home. And we know, listen, we all try to keep a clean house, whether it's our firehouse or our home. But dust does occur, especially where I am down in South Florida, where we have mostly warmer days than up north. And we do want to take a moment here to shout out to our brothers and sisters in Texas throughout the state who have gone above and beyond the call of duty to take care of the citizens and the civilians all throughout the state of Texas through this terrible weather, the freezing cold, the snow and the ice, with thousands of calls coming in daily and probably tens of thousands across the state. Our brothers and sisters, both career and volunteer, are just doing a magnificent job against very difficult circumstances to help the people and the property in their communities. So when this is all over and done with, hopefully you'll reach out and say thank you to them one way or another. And by the way, the best way you can thank them is just say those two words, thank you. However, back to our topic. So we've posted several articles on the blog. We hope you'll visit the website at https://www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org and go right to the blog page and read the last few entries. As I'm dictating this message, I'm in the getting ready to post another article that just came in this morning as well. So this story is not a story that's going to end very soon, and we're going to stay with it because it is so important that not only now does it affect, as we're learning more and more, the men and women of the fire service, and has affected them for over 40 years, but now it affects every human being basically on this planet, and we're 7+ billion people. Can you imagine that somebody who lives in the Northern Territories of Canada might have the same level of these forever chemicals in their body as someone who lives in Central Africa? It's amazing that we have polluted and we've allowed these companies to do this, or they've hid it from us so that we didn't even know what was happening until they got caught. But we are all at stake here because this affects every single one of us. No matter where you live, no matter where you're listening to this podcast, this affects every single one of us. So we hope that you will join this bandwagon and call, as citizens, call for inquiries into these companies who are very good at lying and put up false bravado, but they know, thanks to our friends at the IAFF, our brothers and sisters there, who took a strong stance at their convention, as you heard today, they know they're up against a tough foe now. And we have some great people helping us. As we mentioned, Dr. Graham Peasley, attorney Rob Ballot. Of course, we have our dear friend, Diane and Paul Cotter from Worcester, Mass. So what you can do to help, listen to podcasts, any podcast, not just mine, that deals with these issues of PFAS, PFOS. Listen to any podcast that Sean Mitchell is on, that attorney Rob Ballot is on, that Dr. Graham Peasley is on, that deals with these chemicals, PFAS, PFOS, PFOAs, whatever those initials are, whatever the acronyms are, they're dangerous. They're dangerous. And so we want the manufacturers to see that not only is the American and Canadian Fire Service working to fight against what they've tried to do to us, but the citizenry of our countries, again, not just the U.S. and Canada, but all across this country, all across this world, that citizens also standing up and say, protect our firefighters and protect us, our families, our children, and our children's children. Because you don't deserve to be able to make money off of our fatality. So please, help us and help yourselves at the same time. Let's make it a cleaner place for the earth and for the children that we will leave this planet to. We can do it. We just work together. And we've always found over history, the better we work together, the better our lives become. And that's my view.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Talk to your doctor about creating a plan that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alum Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Captain Sean Mitchell, for joining us to discuss the IAFF stand against the gear manufacturers and the poisons in our gear. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alum Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training, LLC, and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5 Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at /Stephen.S.Green.1, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcasts, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.